Hello and welcome to episode 84 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about all types of topics in tabletop gaming. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we're talking about miniatures games. We've been asked several times, when is a board game a miniatures game, or when do miniatures games become board games? Is just having minis enough? No. We'll talk about all this, as well as some of the new miniatures games that have come out recently. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Giljam, George Gia, and Adam Harrison. Also, a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well.
Thank you, Josh. You know, one of these days I'm going to have you write the intros.
I probably should. Yeah, that didn't sound too natural. But that's fine.
I think it's fun because I write it down and then you read it and then I get to see how it comes out once it's been read.
Yeah. It's a little experiment every week.
It's a little experiment every week. All right. News and announcements. This is what, our fourth hour on the mics today?
Yeah.
Yep.
Kitty's really feeling
it. I'm super into this right now.
She's loving life.
She loves every one of you individually.
I do.
She just doesn't care for me right now.
Yeah. Just kidding. I'm awake. I'm here.
So we just recorded our D&D side chats, part 1 and 2.
Or 0 and 1.
Or 0 or 1.1.
However we're labeling them now. Yeah.
So the first side chat that you'll get to hear this Friday, now that I've said it, I have to make it happen, will be how to play D&D. It's kind of our session 0, us talking through the rules and through the character sheets. And then following that will be the first part of the first part. That's actually accurate, right? The first part of part 1 of the starter set adventure. I think it turned out all right.
Yeah.
We'll see.
As long as the mics were working.
Yeah, we don't know. We used different mics for this, so everyone had lapel mics and stuff. So we'll put that out there. You guys let us know what you think of it. And if you liked it, we'll continue the adventure. If you didn't, then we'll never put it up there again.
I also have a lapel mic on right now, so if it sounded a little bit funny, that's why.
Yeah. Well, that's because you decided to break your mic at the last second.
I had enough of that mic. Bored me.
Did bore you.
Yes.
Let's see. I went to Adepticon this weekend, but since our entire subject is on miniatures games and Adepticon is all about miniatures games, and this was a complete coincidence.
Like, okay, save it.
I'm going to save it.
We'll talk it for on topic.
We'll talk about it on topic. There is a Eurogames thread on BGG right now, which is talking about – I made a comment saying that – I don't play a lot of Euro games because all the good Euro games were published like 10 years ago. And then there's a bunch of people like, wait a minute, there's all kinds of these new Euro games. And I agree with you completely. It wasn't my intent to say that I didn't play Euro games because they're all old. It's just my intent was I haven't played some of the older Euro games because they were old. And they've convinced me to play more Euro games. So go to that thread, though, because I'm going to force Josh and Kitty. I said 3 Euro games. We're going to pick 3 games that the listeners are going to choose. We're going to play all 3 of them, and then we're going to do an episode on those games.
What's the difference between a Euro and a point salad game?
Well, that one's kind of tricky because a lot of Euros are point salads.
That's what I was thinking.
But
it's like a Venn diagram situation,
okay,
though.
Okay.
Yeah. Typically, a
There's
Euro game...
There's a lot
game,
of overlap, but not exclusively the same thing.
Yeah. Ah. So typically a Euro game has minimal to no randomness.
Okay.
And that's kind of maybe a more defining line. It's like everything, though. Everything's a gray area.
I would also say non-elimination.
Non-elimination, very minimal randomness, maybe input randomness. So you're like, here's what you have.
There's often victory choice. Points involved, right? Or not?
Usually yeah. There's some kind of point track. Possibly not always, but okay. I can't think of one off the top of my head that isn't.
Right.
So, but listeners, vote on Eurogames. I'll probably throw a poll up there just so that it's a little bit more organized, but I need to get a nice list of recommendations to put in the poll, and then I'll put that on there.
Do we have a link to this thread in the show notes for this episode?
There could be a link to this thread in the show
I
notes for this episode.
I think that might be a good idea.
I will throw that in there. Also, anytime, any thread we're talking about on BGG, tabletopgametalk.com/BGG will take you directly to our podcast page on BoardGameGeek. We also have a guild page, which I don't know how to delete, but I never use it, and I just refer you to the podcast page. So if you're like, how do I get to your Board Game Geek page? TabletopGameTalk.com/BGG. We'll take you right there. We're giving something away. Dungeons & Dragons, a complete set of all kinds of stuff. The starter set, the player's handbook, the monster manual, the dungeon master's guide. If you already own those, let me know and I'll get you two or three different supplements.
Stuff.
And if you don't have any supplements and you just want D&D Beyond, I will make that happen. Whatever the point, however I can get role-playing in your life, I will make that happen. How do you enter? Well, you have to enter this week because the deadline is this Saturday, March 31st, 2018. If you go to the Board Game Geek Forum, or that I've already mentioned like 8 times, but I'm going to do it 9 times, tabletopgametalk.com/BGG, and go to the episode 79 thread, and you put your top 10, well, not your top 10, your 10 by 10 games in there, so the 10 games you want to play 10 times this year, you will get an extra 5 entries if you email us at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Just mention your Board Game Geek email or username in that body someplace, and you will be entered. That's as easy as it is.
And if you want to do 3 games or 5 games or however many, that's fine too.
Any number of games. Honestly, if you can do... I had one person to me, he's like, I have just started playing board games. I don't have 10 games, so I can't. I'm like, fine. That's fine. You justified it with saying you don't even have 10 games. You're in. So just let me know. We're trying to get statistics. So Sam is actually gathering a whole bunch of statistics so that next week when we announce our winner, we will also give the top 10 10 by 10 game challenge. Wow, that's a lot of 10s.
It's all 10.
It's like orders of magnitude times 10.
Wow.
See what I did there?
It's a lot of numbers.
Yes, and if you go there, I will randomly pick somebody from that thread who's going to win a $25 Amazon gift card as well. So it's totally international friendly. If Amazon delivers to you, feel free to enter because I will order it through whatever Amazon you have. I think that's all our announcements. Let's go to Kickstarters. I backed one this week.
Ooh, spending the big money.
I know. It was, so this one was tricky. So there was a number of games out there that I'm not, like, I'm kind of balancing against. So there's Australia, there's Pacific Rim, there's, and now I'm trying to look at the name, Mysthea?
Yeah.
I think so. That's the best way to say that. Mysthea. And I'm kind of looking at, they're all ending around the same time, and I decided to go with Mysthea because it's a Kickstarter exclusive game.
Ooh.
And if
you
don't...
You can't pass that up, can you?
I know, but if I don't back it here, then I can never get it. Or I'll have to get it on eBay, and next week we'll talk about eBay. But this week... I'm just like, oh, all right, I'm going to get this. So this is a game where it's kind of an area control fighting game, but the areas actually move locations. And as the areas move locations, all your armies move locations. So if you need something adjacent, you have to like move the island next to something else so you can fight it. It looks really cool. I've talked about it on a previous episode, so I'm not going to go into too much detail, but the base game is $105. The collectible version is $170. It includes an art book. I might have done that. It ends March 29th. So it's Mysthea. This is a very, very miniatures-esque, like I say, floating islands, like fighting against each other thing. Kickstarter is killing me. There's just so many good games.
Did you
games
say that there. The base was 105 and the collector's is 117?
I did sort of say that.
Oh, I missed that. Sorry. That's what happens when you zone out, guys. Pay attention on your own podcast.
It wouldn't be a podcast if
I saw the numbers and it just shocked me. Anyway, carry on.
Well, they're odd numbers because it's in a different currency. I think it's in UK currency.
Right.
So the conversion is this for US.
Seems
and I'd like
of
to be consistent.
Too.
It is, well, so board games are expensive these days.
That's true. That's true. I'll give you that.
You know, I don't normally do this, but I'm going to spoiler our next episode.
Ooh.
If you listen till the end of this episode, you will know that our next episode is games as collectibles. And this is because I've been spending a lot of time on eBay and a lot of time looking at the cost of games and things like that. And I want to talk more about it. And that's all I will say about that. So I'm watching 2 other games on Kickstarter right now. The first one is Girl Genius, The Works. This one just popped on my radar today. It's based off of a comic of the name Girl Genius. It is a card game with, it's kind of like cyberpunk-esque. So you put down this 12-card grid, but each of the cards are either, you know, they're face up or they're vertical or horizontal. And you kind of place them out until you have this four cards and then two cards on either side. So you have 12 cards total. So did I say that right? Four cards in the middle, two cards on the top, bottom, left, right. So it's 12 cards. And as you spin the cards, if they match up certain colors on the sides, then those cards pop off. And then when they pop off, they do something cool and special, which could pop other cards or do other things or whatever. But you're trying to pop as many cards as you can because that goes into your victory point pile. First 1 to 70 victory points wins the game. It looks really, really fun for a deck of cards. And there's four decks of cards, and each one has like a different like theme to it. And a deck of cards is only $12, so you can back this game for $12. You can get, there's four decks of cards, so you can back four decks for $48. You can also get the playmat, which I would highly recommend because playmats are cool. So you get everything, all four decks of cards, and the playmat for $60. And it's like this cyberpunk cool theme. It's this one I feel like I have to back, even though I can only back one a week, and therefore I usually back things that are relatively cheap, or no, not cheap, more expensive, because I'm like, well, I can only back one, so I might as well spend $105 or $117.
That's not how this should work at all. It's meant to be saving you money.
It's not. But,
right.
So this one I'm like, all right, this one looks really cool. I may have to give this one my backing. It ends April 20th. This is Girl Genius, the works. Dragon Keepers. This is another game. Dragon Keepers was designed by Vital Lacerda. He's a designer of Lisboa, The Gallerist, CO2, a bunch of others. He designed this game with his daughter. And the whole premise of this game is you are trying to save dragons. Like, dragons are being attacked by hunters, and you are trying to save them. So it's kind of like a How to Train Your Dragons type of thing. And I think it's super cute. There's two modes. There's competitive mode. And in competitive mode, you're like, you're trying to save three dragons before anybody else. So that's what you're competing. But it looks like the cooperative mode is like the real thing here, because that like all the pieces that come with the game come into play here, and you're trying to level up the dragons and power them up, and as soon as you get a certain number of dragons that can attack the hunters, then you win as a group. And it's like, that looks really cool. It's a card game. There's a number of little counters and chips and things like that with it, and it's only $25. It ends April 9th. This is Dragon Keepers. This one has not yet funded, but I would be devastated if it didn't. So if you like dragons and you want to save dragons and you want to support father-daughter design sessions, then check out, and is it enough guilt? Not enough guilt?
I think it's just the right amount.
Just the right amount of guilt? Okay. Mm. Check out Dragon Keepers. Take a look at it. Like I say, it's $25, and this is one of those games that I'm going to try to convince Kitty to back, because now I have her on the Kickstarter bug.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. She's.
I'm tired.
She
I zoned out. Pulled a Josh here.
She bought a whole Kickstarter.
All right, so this is on my show.
You always carry the Kickstarter segment. I thought I had like 5 minutes to take a pretend nap here.
Well, you don't. You totally did, and you agreed to back Dragon Keepers.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It's only $25. It's a cute little card game. You like it. All right. There's one other game I want to mention. This is from Christopher Farnsley. He sent us an email, and he's like, shameless shout out for a game of a friend of his. This game is called Dagons, D-A-G-O-N-S, Bones. This is it looks like a fun little filler game. So it's really three dice and some coins and a rule sheet. But it's also only like $20, so it's not like a super expensive game. But the way this works is each of the three dice are custom dice, and they don't all have the same sides on each one. So there's seven symbols that appear on these three different dice. And you're really basically kind of rolling these dice to get different abilities that each of the faces do. There's some re-rolling in there. And you're trying, each of you start in a four-player game, you'll all start with five coins, and the goal is to get to 10 coins. So double your coins and you win the game. It looks pretty interesting. I would say that they are honestly, they need help because it's $20 and their goal is $9,000. So that means 450 backers. Yeah. So it's worth $20 in my mind. It's like there's really nothing there that's not worth $20, but you need to get a lot of backers behind it. So Christopher, I'm sending like a shout out for your friend and good luck to him. It's also on my list of things to watch. But the game that I reviewed, and I showed this to you guys, Chimera Station.
It's really fun. I'm trying not to play with the pieces right now while I zone
failing.
Out.
Failing not to play with the pieces.
They grow, there's
but it's fine.
I haven't been clicking them because they do click together, and I felt like that would make too much noise. So I've just been pretending to stack them.
Yeah. Chimera Station. So I've had this game for probably 2 or 3, maybe even longer months. I just haven't got it to the table yet. This is by Tasty Mental Games, better known because of the logo as TMG. This is a worker placement game where you are one of 4 different aliens, and the aliens just vary in color. They're red, yellow, purple, and green. And you're trying to get the most victory points in your space station in 5 rounds. So you start out, depending on the number of players, you'll start out with either from 2 to 4 workers. So in a 4-player game, you're starting out with 2 workers each. In a 2-player game, you're starting out with 4 workers each. And you place, that was a click of those pieces. And you place your workers on different hubs inside of the space station. One of the hubs and the most common early on is the build a new hub on the space station. Everything you do, not everything, but many things you do get victory points. Now, the thing that's cool about this, because it is a worker placement game, but there are 4 different genetic modifications you can do to your workers. You can have the yellow tentacles. So if your worker has a tentacle, then anytime you collect money or food, you collect an additional money or food. And if something collects you money and food, you get one of each of both of those.
Nice.
If you have 2 tentacles on your alien, then you get alien parts. Anytime you collect an alien part, which is a tentacle is an alien part, you get to collect another one of those. Now, each alien can only ever have 2 parts maximum, so that's your tentacle parts. But now you go to your plant parts. Your plant parts, if you have a plant part on the alien, he doesn't need to eat because he just generates his own food. Now, this is weird, but if he has 2 plant parts, he not only doesn't need to eat, he generates 2 food for everyone else because he's like giving fruit from his self, from his own soul to other aliens.
That would be useful.
I'm just saying strawberries are good no matter where they come from.
Disagree.
Then you have the purple brain units, and the purple brain units, they get you victory points. So anytime you place an alien with a purple brain in it, he gets victory points based on what hub he's going on. Every hub has a certain victory point value. So the brains get, you know, extra things. So if you have 2 brains, you get super victory points whenever you place it on a command hub, which allows you to get victory points for everybody who's anywhere in the space station. And then the last one is the claws. So like worker placement games, typically if someone goes where you want to go, you can't go there. Well, if you have a claw, you can scare them off and then they go away. But if you have a double claw, well, the single claw only does like a normal alien or a 1 modification alien. A double claw, you can just scare everything off. This game, it looks like if you look in the box, you might be like, oh, this is kind of kidsy cutesy. It is super strategic heavy. Like it's probably one of my, I have not this. It,
really?
So good.
No words.
There's no words. So Alien Artifact was a dice rolling worker placement. So you place the dice, and that was like a twist on worker placement that was like awesome and everyone loved it. This is the next one in that. This is a worker placement game that has a twist that makes you want to keep playing it. There's so many different things you can do. It is just awesome. And there's also like personal like places that you can buy and you can place your workers on there. So that's Chimera Station. Also pronounced Chimera Station.
No, it should not be.
Well, it has a CH.
Chimera. It's all good.
All right.
Didn't you watch Mission Impossible 2?
Yes.
No.
Thank you. What? That's where I got it
from. Well, now you have to go watch Mission Impossible 2.
Again.
Yeah.
Fine. But it still has a CH in there.
It's a Greek thing.
It's a Greek thing. So yeah. Chimera Station. It is awesome. All right. Let's go into our shortest feedback segment ever.
Indeed, yes. Let's get some feedback about past episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, please email us or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. First, we have one from Anne, who wanted to call out Legends of Andor as a story game where each time you play through a different chapter in the story arc.
Yeah, so this one kind of flew under my radar. This was published back in 2012, and it looks like it's like a short campaign thing, but as you're going through each of these scenarios, different cards will get flipped up. So it reminded me of Pandemic Legacy in the fact that the story's progressed as you play through the different scenarios. Right. Now, there's only 5 scenarios, but it still makes me very intrigued in this because Anne mentions like she was surprised that this didn't get mentioned because it's known for its storiness.
Right.
I think it may have just come out before its time. So maybe something that we pay more attention to, and I might have to try to pick this one of these up.
All right. We have some more feedback from Michael, who suggests we change the episode name from our last episode to Gloomhaven and some other games that came before it.
Yeah.
I didn't think we spent that much time on Gloomhaven.
Maybe not. I might have been enthusiastic about Gloomhaven.
Yeah. Well, clearly it was enough for someone to write in about it. So
Michael's one of my most favorite opinionated people, though. So sure. I'm just saying, there was a moment in time where I was going to go back and change the episode name, but I'm thinking maybe I just had subtitles to all the episodes.
Right, little taglines.
You know, Winnie the Pooh chapter style, yeah. In which.
Yeah, sort of Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back. Or
well, so we're in episode 84, which means we're 16 episodes from episode 100. Mm. And I've been already thinking about what we're going to do for episode 100.
20 episodes for our 2-year anniversary.
Shut up, Josh. So I'm trying to think of like maybe different ways that we change what the segments are, the length of the segments, those type of things. There's going to be a poll on Board Game Geek in the very, very near future. Like just kind of get a feel for what people like, what they don't, that type of thing. I kind of like the idea of like naming something and then having a subtitle for every episode. So that might actually make it into episode 101.
All right. So we're going to go to a quick question. This comes from one of our listeners. It will not fill an entire show topic, but we think is interesting nonetheless. Today's question comes from Lance. Curious on thoughts of expansions or compilation games, I can read. Should you play the base game for a while before getting expansions? Sometimes expansions are on sale, etc. Do some base games really need the expansions?
So the answer to the last question is yes.
Yeah.
But that's not a great answer to the last question. I don't know. This is tricky because I find myself, whenever I'm teaching a new game, removing all the expansions from the game.
Yeah.
Typically. There are a few minor exceptions.
I would say the exception are ones that only change player count.
Player count's a good one. Or maybe like adding a few more options that are not overly complicated.
Yeah.
I might keep those in there. And when I'm looking at getting an expansion, I always play the base game first. Because otherwise you don't really know what the expansion's doing. Like, why do you need the expansion?
Wait, you're telling me.
I mean, I may own the expansion, but I want to play the base game before I add the expansion.
The idea that you had never bought the base game and the expansion at the same time, just, I was like, there's no way that didn't happen.
Because that's like every Kickstarter ever comes.
Yeah.
Like, there's almost always a stretch goal that is an expansion that comes with the base game then.
Yeah. I'm currently getting into Masmora, and that one is like, I haven't actually played it yet, but I'm like, I must own everything. Again, next episode. But my general thoughts are still the same for even if I own the expansion or not. I want to play the base game first, then I'll add the expansion in. Because then I also know whether or not I should pull the expansion back out if it didn't add anything to it. Now, are there games that really need an expansion? I would say, this is a very subjective thing.
Yeah.
If you're happy with the game, then no. But if you're not happy with the game and an expansion comes out where like, oh, now this fixes the game for me, then I would say absolutely for you, this is a required expansion. I keep going back to Zaya because Zaya, I love this game. I love the base game. But the expansion makes the base game so much better that I would never play it without the base game. In fact, I would never teach it. Or I would never play without the expansion.
Yeah.
In fact, I would never teach it without the expansion. I would just say this is part of the game because the things it adds to it are all pluses and they don't actually complicate things all that much, if at all, really. So in that case, it's like, yeah, let's just treat the expansion as a thing that is here. You know, we've talked about Carcassonne before. I think like the Rivers and Streams expansion can be like a staple expansion. It goes with everything without really any kind of thought. You just throw it in there.
Yeah. So you don't even notice. I think we had it in there and we were playing with it. And it was only when I was reading how many tiles we needed that I was like, oh, there's an expansion in here.
Yeah, we're playing with this expansion. So, and other expansions, Terraforming Mars has a number of expansions. And in that case, like, one of them is a board expansion. You know very much that you're playing with a different expansion. You don't need that in your first game because you haven't played with a base board yet. So what does it matter which board you're playing with? But if you get bored of that first board, that's a lot of redundancy.
But is it?
I don't know. But if you get bored with the first board, then you have other boards that you could play. And the expansion has a double-sided board. It's a lot of boring.
But then there are games like Catan, where the expansions completely change the entire dynamic of the game. And I don't know if I like any of them.
No. There's... I think I like the castles expansions of Catan, where like your cities can become castles, but you're not seafaring or barbarian or all those other things. But yeah, you're right. Like,
they
throwing all
so
those...
many mechanics in there, it's just too much.
Yeah. And I agree. I like Catan. When I play it, I want to play it just the base game.
Purist.
I'm fine playing the pure game. And
like people like that Catan though. I'm sure there's tons of people that love it.
There are, and I'm sure there's people who play with like every expansion.
Right.
I just don't know why.
Sometimes you want variety in your life. I mean, I haven't played any expansions, so I can't say whether they're good or not. But
you played the Star Wars one. Did you play? No, you have still Star Trek.
Star Trek.
You still haven't played the Star Trek in town.
It's sitting at home. We stole it from you and then didn't play it yet. We will, though.
Yeah. I got
I think ours is still in shrink wrap. No.
I got a text from Gloria with a picture of Josh, and they were playing Wordsy. And I come play, knowing that we're like an... 45 miles away.
This was Gloria's idea. But yeah, no, she wanted you to know that we were playing it at least.
Yeah. Well, did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was great.
All right.
I was only one point off.
The Wordsy seems like a fun game.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go on topic before the 30-minute mark. This is going to be like a record for the time. I have to press a button, though.
In this episode, we're talking about miniatures games. Grand maps with armies clashing among buildings, hills, trees, or whatever else can be represented in a 3x4 foot area, or whatever size is called for. We can mostly agree that these games are different than your traditional board game, but what makes them different and how might you get into this part of the hobby?
So this game, this whole miniatures concept came out of Michael saying, hey, in your whole, what were we talking about? We were talking about, games that require ongoing investment.
Yeah.
We didn't really talk about miniatures games all that much, which is true. We did mention a little bit, but I think more in passing than anything else. So I'm like, all right, well, let's focus on miniature games because I haven't had a lot of people Let's delve into it. And then Adepticon comes, like, just pops up on my radar and like, oh, this is like down the street from me. I should probably go to this. And Adepticon is a convention in a suburb of Chicago, Schaumburg, and it is all about miniatures games. So this weekend, I spent my time at Adepticon walking by, I think scores is the correct term. So 20s of miniatures games, or a score of 10.
Score 10. Score's 20.
20, yeah. So 20s of miniatures games.
Abraham Lincoln would be so disappointed in you right now.
Four scores and some odd years ago.
So, come on, Chris. You know history.
I failed my history check.
Oh, boy.
Well, we've just spent the entire afternoon playing D&D. So the number of miniatures games that are Adepticon is crazy, and we're talking all types. But really what got me looking at this was there are so many miniatures games that are coming out, like modern miniatures games. And this is a genre in my mind that is a niche of a niche, right? So board gaming in general, tabletop gaming is a niche hobby. Like, we love it. We've talked about it. For a long time, we've been talking about it. But it's still a relative niche hobby. Then when you talk about the miniatures game inside of that hobby, that's such a smaller portion.
And yet, it takes up such a large footprint in every convention. Those tables are huge. They are huge. Walk by them and there's so much going on.
But whenever I walk by them, I want to take pictures of them because awesome.
It's true.
Well, skeptical Sam over here. I have been anti-miniatures games for like well over a decade when I first had one little fleeting go at one with a friend of mine. I think we're about 15 or something. And I think we played for about 30 minutes. I think we had moved two pieces each. And we had also got into some like screaming match over like whether we'd actually move 6 inches or not, or whether we were cheating. And we sort of both decided it was not a good idea that we should continue playing because we might not be friends anymore. So I don't know. I've just always looked at it and it's always seemed a little bit off-putting, not just for that bad experience reason, but just it seemed like there was so much big barriers to entry.
There are huge barriers to entry.
Yeah.
Huge.
Right.
So, all right. First of all, I threw a definition up on BoardGameGeek. And I was shot down pretty quickly. I was like, I mostly agree with you except for this one element. So I've kind of refined my definition of what a tabletop miniatures game is. First of all, and this is, I was hanging out with Terrence this weekend at Adepticon, and we've decided that army/team construction before the game is a quintessential component of a miniatures game.
Definitely.
So, which essentially means, like, you have a number of different things. Now, Michael disagreed with my term of calling them collectible components, like collectible armies. And I agree with Michael. It doesn't need to be collectible. There's Gaslands is Michael's current obsession. And that you can basically pull off any toy off the shelf and call it, here's my thing. So there's nothing really collectible there. But there is always some kind of construction of your army before you sit down. Warhammer does this through points. Actually, most things do it through points.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of MechWarrior? BattleTech. They're same universe, different names for the same thing. But BattleTech, when I was in high school, it's like you'd build your own mech out of points, and you'd have a team of mechs that you could put together, and you'd fight each other. So you have to make that construction there. So it's very similar to a collectible card game or even a living card game where you're constructing something before you play the game. So that is number one thing that I think is required. Number two, non-static maps.
Yes.
So there is no here's the board you play on.
I was going to say lack of a board.
Lack of a board. Yes. So you have a play surface.
Yes.
But that play surface is generated as part of the setup of the game.
Yes.
So I may go and I'm like, all right, I built this group that's really good at dealing with like streams and waters and stuff. So I want to put a lot of stream and water terrain on the map. And Kitty may have built something that's really good with mountains. So she's going to put a lot of hills and mountainy things on the map. But we go back and forth and we're constructing this map as part of the game setup. And there's various versions of this.
Wow, yeah. That sounds like a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
Wow.
And there's no real, I mean, there's rules, but there's not really rules.
Right.
And a lot of the games, they don't come with terrain. This is terrain that you've bought from another game company or that you've made yourself. Setups that change every single time. That's another component I'd say is that these maps are never the same play to play.
Yep. And now there are rules of like hiding behind something gives you cover and things like that. But how the terrain gets laid out, short of you can't have it this close to this or that close to that or something like that, it's pretty much free for all. So in addition, there's also some kind of measurement system. Typically what you think of when you think about this, so you're pulling out tape measures and rulers and whatever, and you're like, I'm moving 3 inches this direction. Things like X-Wing will have actual little segment measures where you put the segment next to the ship and then you go to the end and you put the ship next to that.
Which are pretty cool.
They are pretty cool.
But they can be difficult to deal with this terrain that you've just laid out.
So I'm walking along in Adepticon and watching I think there were literally 30 tables of people playing X-Wing. And each person had their own, like, kind of, like, custom cutout segments of all of their different rulers and stuff. And you click the thing, and the ruler would pop up, and you're doing this segment, and you put it back in your thing, and then someone would, like, and then they pop out the same thing. So people, they think about this stuff because you have all these ruler segment things are interesting. They're fun. They're cool. I think they're a little fiddly at times, but they're cool. But you don't need necessarily rulers. You don't necessarily need the segment things. You can have a map with grids and hexes on them, and that's okay. That measures your things as well. HeroClix has moved to, I think, a grid map is what HeroClix uses. It used to be measured. In fact, HeroClix came from Mage Knight, not the board game Mage Knight, but an actual WizKids came from their very first game was this game called Mage Knight, where there's little clicks on the bottom, and it was a miniatures tabletop game where all of the abilities and hit points and all that stuff was just this dial that you clicked on the bottom of your miniature and you moved it around. It was just a generic fantasy. It was a great game. I loved it. I played a ton of it at the time. And then they said, okay, well, we need a license for it. And then they got like the Marvel license and then the DC license, and it became HeroClix, and Mage Knight, the miniatures game, went completely away. Then it was the board game, and now WizKids is what they are today.
I was surprised that the whole measuring this kind of weirdness to it has stuck around so long, or was even there in the first place. In my mind, it doesn't seem logical that you wouldn't have a grid system from the day one, but I don't know, it seems like a kind of quirk of miniatures that's been there for ever.
So grid systems seem limiting to me. The way that you move troops around, a lot of them are units where you have a commander and then the rest of the unit moves around the commander, and they've got such like an area that they can be in. And if you're in a grid system, they can only be 9 people in a square around the commander. Whereas if it's in within 2 inches of the commander, you can really play with that a lot more.
Yeah,
I hadn't thought about that aspect. Yeah. Very good point.
And imagine, so the games that use grid systems or hex systems, when you place your terrain, you have to place them within the grid or the hex. So you're also limited by like the dynamicism. That's a word.
Sure.
of the game, of the board. So, but if you can just throw things down wherever, now you can actually create this like real, well, quote unquote, realistic scenes.
I see. So that your troops are in. Like right up against the tree for cover, and there's a guy like, you know, up on top of the tower.
Yeah.
And
but now you get into the debates where, well, you're not actually touching my base, so we're not in melee because we're 2 millimeters
That's
apart from each other.
That's what we were starting to argue about, me and my friend all those years ago.
Yep. So the last thing I'm going to say as far as definition is no board AI, or at least minimal board AI. So that eliminates the things like Zombicide and Arcadia Quest, where technically you're doing all of these things we're talking about. You're going around, you're shooting each other, you're trying to blow things up, but there's a board that's fighting against you. I don't think of those as miniature games in the way that we're talking about them today. So these are typically skirmish games, 1v1 or multiple people versus multiple people, but it's not you're fighting the board. And there's plenty of argument to be put in there. It's the same argument as am I a millimeter away from you or touching your base type of argument. But for the sake of what we're talking about today, I was going to say the sake of argument, but I didn't want to argue anymore. So I made you guys watch some YouTube videos for this one.
Yes.
Which was the Star Wars Legions.
Yes.
What do you guys think? Actually, I'm going to start with you, Josh, since you only watched the first two.
Yeah, I know. I didn't do all my homework. But I don't know. It made it look like a real pain. Because there were so many bits to each figure. Like, you know, there was like 4 or 5 pieces to put together for each miniature. And even then, you know, once you detach them from their thing, there might be extra bits of plastic that he had to like scrape away with his scalpel, and he's there fiddling around with super glue and trying to make sure all the pieces join properly. And I'm just like, wow, this is a lot of work.
I would agree. What did you?
Yeah. I mean, other than that, it looked like a lot of work.
All right. So Kitty, you watched a little bit more, so you get to see like the fruits of that labor.
Yeah. So I still think, in all of these games now that I'm seeing with pre-assembled and painted miniatures, that it becomes less and less of a fun thing to assemble and paint and painstakingly care for all of the miniatures in your game, especially ones that have weapons that can so easily be snapped off and that kind of stuff. You've got to really, really baby those guys. But the actual gameplay kind of looked fun. So I am a big fan of playing role-playing games, tabletop role-playing games. Playing the combat especially can be really fun, but you have to have a lot of people. this seems kind of like something where if you only have two people, you still get the fun part of putting together your army, which is kind of like building a character in D&D. You get to like try to min-max your stuff. You get to, how am I going to spend my points? Really, dive into how am I going to put together my team.
Optimize it in every way that you want to match your play style.
Before the game starts. And then you also get the fun of like, how can I get close enough to cover? How can I move my tanks or whatever so that I can get the best view of the most miniatures of my opponent? What order do I want to move my troops in? That kind of stuff. It gives you all of those fun kind of like, if you enjoy the fiddly parts of role-playing games, then this might be where you really belong is in miniature games.
I completely agree. I will go on the record of saying I love miniatures games. I don't play them very often, and I don't play them very often because you have to have someone on the other side of the table that is just as passionate about them as you are.
Yes.
So we've talked Dice Masters a few times where it's like, okay, I'm creating this. Here's my eight things and here's my dice and here's this. And I'm playing Kitty and like she says, well, you have all this time to research this and figure out what the best moves are and all the things. Miniatures games take that to another level. Now, it's kind of the same as like your collectible card games and building decks and things like that. Actually, it's not even kind of. It's exactly the same in the building, but now you have to go a step further and say, also, I'm willing to buy these pieces, put them together, paint them, make armies out of them.
You don't necessarily have to paint them.
Exactly.
They are easier to identify if you do, though.
Yes.
And they look cool.
And I think there's some Warhammer tournaments where you're not qualified as an actual army unless you're painted.
Wow.
Yeah. But Fantasy Flight.
Yes.
Cue Fantasy Flight. And this is what I sent Josh and Kitty. So I wanted them to watch the Star Wars Legion how to play videos because Rodney Smith did a how to play on Star Wars Legions, which really said I need to do an episode on this because how to play, he talks about how to play board games. And Star Wars Legions is quintessential miniatures game through and through. There's no gray area. It's not a board game. It is a miniatures game. But if you back up a little bit and you go Star Wars X-Wing or Star Wars Armada, which I truly do not understand why they're different games. X-Wing is the fighters fighting each other and Armada is the big ships fighting each other. But in any case, all of these things are pre-painted. They're like you buy them. There's no randomness. You know exactly what you're buying. You know what cards are in the thing.
Fantasy Flight is the producer of the game?
Yes. So they basically are the publisher of the X-Wing miniatures game and the Armada miniature game and the Star Wars Legion miniatures game.
And so you're saying that company tends to do pre-painted miniatures?
For Star Wars, X-Wings, and Armada, yes. But for Legions, no. Oh. For Legions, it's the clip and assemble, glue and paint.
Right.
So Legions has actually taken it to, this is the ground combat, and they've taken it to the Warhammer level of this is now a true miniatures game, hobbyist type of assemble and paint game. But you don't have to play with that, right? You can play with you can go X-Wing, and it is a really easy way to get into the miniatures world. And actually, that's what HeroClix is as well. It's superheroes miniatures games, but super easy. Everything's pre-painted, pre-assembled. You don't have to do anything besides assemble your army, go and play. And for X-Wing, you have hexes, and so there is no determination of, oh, I'm 2 millimeters away from you, so we're not in melee type of thing. You just, well, my hex is adjacent to yours. Actually, I think it's squares, but whatever the case, you're adjacent, so it just works. So I think that I love these miniatures games so much. I just need to find someone who's like super, super dedicated so they can play at the same level that I want to play at, and we can like play against each other. But first, let's back up a little bit and talk about how you can get into this in a more easy, gentle way. So there are games that are like mini games in a box. Miniatures games in a box, I think is a better way to say that, because mini games in a box is like the Altoids game. But the one I like the most right now, because my game tastes change all the time, is Warhammer Shadespire. This game is, it really walks a line. I'm not 100% sure if this is a miniature game or a board game, and you could debate this either way. But the miniatures come in the same way that most Warhammer miniatures come, which is like this sort of like plastic sheet of components. You clip the components off. You put the components together. You don't, for Shadespire, you don't need glue. So the components actually go together quite well without any extra pieces. You can just plug them together. Each army is a different color, so you don't actually need to paint them either. You can identify them very easily by the colors, but you can paint them. I have painted all of mine so far, except for the most current factions. They're assembled, they're primed, I just haven't painted them yet. So, and what happens here is when you are generating your board, the first player chooses the board, the second player chooses the board, then you place your board down on either side you want, the other player places their board down and matches up with certain rules, and you place certain objectives down. So you are building your battle zones, arenas, whatever you want to call them, just like you would any other miniatures game. And then you play, and it's a 5-turn game. You play for 5 turns. Your construction is essentially you're choosing your army, and you have 2 different decks. You have an objective deck, and it's kind of like a perk or an upgrade. I don't remember what they call the other things, but it's the action cards that you can take. So that is what you're constructing. So it's more deck construction than army construction, because you're going to choose, I want the barbarians. So you're going to choose all 5 barbarians are in your army regardless, because just barbarians. But now you build a deck around those barbarians. This game, super easy to get into. Like, you can buy the base box and that's all you need. Putting together the pieces, not that complicated. There's some assembly required, but it's not like, you know, Kingdom Death Monster assembly level required. And you're ready to play. Like, out of the box, you're ready to, like, play against each other. I really, really like this. It's a dueling tactic 2-player game, and it still gives you that feeling of miniatures battle.
What's the big thing about Warhammer? Because I remember growing up, it seemed like to me miniatures games was Warhammer. From the outside, not knowing anything about miniatures games, I was like, oh, that's that Warhammer thing, right? So why has this become the big popular thing?
So Games Workshop has done a great job at basically publicizing Warhammer, especially in the UK. I think Games Workshop is more popular in the UK than the US. Right. Like, there's stores here too.
Right.
But Warhammer has a number of different, I guess, histories or timelines. There's Warhammer Fantasy. There's Warhammer 40K. So Warhammer Fantasy is your traditional orcs and paladins and your fantasy stuff. And your 40K stuff is the exact same races, but with, like, laser guns and other
sci-fi version.
Sci-fi version of it, yeah. Okay. And there's a Warhammer 30K too, which I don't know a lot about. I just actually saw it today, which I guess is still pretty far in the future. So maybe it's just before 40K. I don't know. Yeah. Games Workshop has done a great job marketing their stuff more than anything. They have an entire line of paints and brushes, and, you know, they teach people how to, like, assemble their miniatures and put them together. The miniatures themselves, once they're assembled, are really, really cool looking. I mean, we're talking miniatures that are 1.5, 2 inches tall. Actually, I don't think that's even 2 inches, but somewhere in that range. And they're super, super detailed. Yeah. Like, they look phenomenal for what they are.
Yeah.
So that's really, like, Warhammer. If you say Warhammer, most people have heard of it.
Right.
You know,
I think you're right. That makes sense, because I would just walk past the store and see it all in the window. So, yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yep. But now you also looked at it, and you looked at this weird map with green hills and trees and terrains and probably a bunch of white dudes standing around a table with a tape measure and a laser pointer, because literally checking line of sight, here's my laser pointer. Does it pass through? Can I get through that tree?
Right.
Like, that's how it's set. So it can be really, really off-putting for somebody who wants to, like, oh, that looks cool, but these guys look a little too serious for me.
Yes. It's a big barrier to entry.
Yep. So, and that's why I kind of like Shadespire, because if you have one other person that's interested in playing, this is a game I can teach you and you can play, and you don't think you're playing this this in-depth miniatures game.
Yeah, that seems more my kind of pace right now as someone who hasn't never played a miniatures game.
So is there an actual board for Shadespire?
Yep. So the base box comes with two double-sided half boards.
Okay.
And so when it's your turn, when it's, you're building your map, you get to decide, do I sort choose side A or B of my board? And then the other person chooses A or B of their board. You have to have at least three hexes that overlap so you can get from one board to the other. But that's really the only rules there. And then you're also placing these objectives, and it's kind of the same way. There's certain restrictions on where you can place your objectives, which are kind of terrain-y, but they're just kind of points that you're fighting over in the map, and you're blind placing them, and then you reveal them. So each objective has a number, and then you just flip over the number after everyone's been placed, and like these are where the objectives go. Your objective deck, when you're playing, will tell you how to get points, and oftentimes some of the, well, oftentimes that is hold objective two for until the end of the turn and you get a victory point or something like that. So that's how Shadespire works. And like I say, it's a great way to kind of transition into seeing if you would like miniatures games without doing that full on investment into, okay, I got to buy an army and paint them all and, you know, not even talking assembly and all of that kind of stuff.
So winning a miniatures game.
Yeah, mostly it's just destroying the other person. Not always, though. There's so many different ways. When I was playing Battletech, winning was destroy the other person.
Yeah.
There are a ton of miniatures games where it's objective-based, though.
Yeah.
Which are probably my favorite.
So even in these objective-based games, though, you can win by taking out the other army.
Yes. So imagine an
objective.
Almost always. Yes. Imagine an objective where it is your objective to escape from a certain, you're in a prison, you need to escape from that prison.
Yeah.
And this could be pretty much any miniatures game. It's harder to balance asymmetrical objectives. So your objective might be escape within X number of time units. And the defender is don't let the person escape. So, obviously, if you kill everybody, you win because they couldn't escape, or you've defended against, you know, you've killed all the guards, so you're able to escape. But usually, if you just focus on the objective and just sacrifice what you need to, you're going to do a much better job at getting through said scenario. I don't know. I really like those scenarios better. When you talk about hero clicks, oftentimes, and I don't want to speak too much to this because I know there's a lot of people who really love HeroClix. So I'm going to speak more to Mage Knight, which was the predecessor to HeroClix. But the objective there was to kill your opponent.
Yeah.
Really, just eliminate your opponent and you win. And you, once you killed a few of them, you could overwhelm them. And
it seems sometimes like objectives are just more like a roadmap of how I'm going to kill my opponent this time.
Yes.
Like you have kind of an idea of like, a lot of them seem to be like, hold a point or be near a point or hold on to a thing for a while. So you just have like, so we're going to go near this thing and that's where the melee battles are going to happen. This is where our ranged attacks are coming from.
Yep. And because holding objectives is a big thing. It's kind of that whole King of the Hill type of thing. And Shadespire is very much like that. You're trying to hold these objectives. And so there's a lot of conflict around these objectives. But then you have things like, so Blood Bowl. Also another Games Workshop game, also in the 40K universe, actually the Warhammer universe. I think it's 40K, but it could be fantasy. Either way, you have orcs and berserkers playing football against each other. The objective of that is to win a football game. You know, so you gain points, and that is the idea of how these miniatures games play. It is a 60-70 page book on how to play this game, though.
Wow.
It's insane.
That is insane.
So, like, we just recorded our first How to Play Dungeons & Dragons. You can learn how to play Dungeons & Dragons in 4 pages. 4 pages. It's simpler than most board games that you'll ever play.
Except for all the nuance.
Well, so, fine. You have some nuances here and there.
You know, like, as many books as people can write about it, nuances.
Sure. But the core mechanics are relatively straightforward.
Yes.
So, and I try to... D&D is really simple, I promise. You really only have to know about the character that you're creating and you don't need to worry about anything else.
Unless you're the dungeon master.
Unless you're the dungeon master, and then you ask the players, what does that do again? Which I do a lot. So there's the objectives and how you win. There's as many different objectives and how you win as there is different miniatures games to play. So I still have not yet to play Blood Bowl. I really want to. It's there. I've assembled half my armies, and now I need to assemble the other half because I've done it for Shadespire. I put all those together, so I'm like, all right, fine. I've gotten past that whole I don't want to assemble things anymore, but we'll make Blood Bowl.
Now that you have your table set up and I'm a stay-at-home mom, I feel like we can make this happen.
I need to get you a little painting corner.
I know.
So you can just, like, paint while he naps.
Yeah, we just have to get him to nap. Also.
Step one.
Player three, nap.
Yeah. So there are a few games, a few other games. So I mentioned Pacific Rim as a Kickstarter that I was looking at a couple weeks ago. This turns out to be just a straight up miniatures game. Like the kaiju, these are the kaiju I'm using. This is a number of points. Double that, well, the threat level. Double that, and that's how many of the
Jaegers
that you get to spend. Like, that's how many points you spend. So, and then you put buildings on the board and things like that, and then you fight against each other. So Pacific Rim comes off as a board game. It's really just a miniatures game. And I don't mean just in a derogatory way. It's just like, it is a miniatures game. So if you like that kind of gameplay, you may like these miniatures games and going the next level. When you look at something like Gaslands, they don't actually publish much of anything besides rules. They're like, here are the rules. Here's like how to play and, you know, keeping track of like, campaign play and organized play and that type of thing. But really it's like buy a Hot Wheels car and throw it out there. And then this is the number of points that you can spend to make this Hot Wheels car do cool things. And you can mod that car as much as you want. You can glue guns on it if you want to. You can make it look any way you want. Gaslands is almost like just take anything and put it all together and make it a game. Like make it fun, make it interesting, and make it work. And that's the kind of things you can do with these miniature games, and there's miniature games communities. If you really like this, you don't have to spend a lot of money on this.
Right.
A lot of these miniature games also seem to have evolving rule books over time.
Yes.
So when you start playing the game, it seems like different situations arise, and as they arise, people kind of bring it to the attention of, like, there's a online rule book.
We call them the consortium.
Sure. The consortium will take into account these scenarios and update the rule books. So a game that you played 2 weeks ago might be illegal by the new rule set, and you have to kind of keep up on that.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely revisions, and anything that has tournament play will have that kind of thing where it's like, oh, we didn't think about this, or this scenario came up and we had to make a judgment on this. So here is our ruling and this is how it works. It's really the kind of the thing is like, okay, well, if I move and I'm within a millimeter of another unit, I'm not actually making face-to-face combat, but I'm attacking with a pole arm, which has some kind of reach, but it's still a melee weapon. Does this count? And it's like, all right, there has to be some kind of ruling. It's like, no, this doesn't count. But there's also that fudge factor when you're moving things like around corners and you're following, whether it be, you know, string that has measurements on there, or, you know, am I only allowed to move straight lines? Or X-Wing does it because certain ships can only turn at certain speeds. So you have a straight line, you can go this distance with two units, but if you're turning, you go this. But if you're doing a sharp turn, it's this, which is not as much distance, but you're turning there, and certain ships can't move, and they can't make sharp turns. They can only go straight or like soft turns or whatever the case.
If you're initiating them, you have to move so far as your first move, and you can't go off the edge of the table play area.
Yeah. And we also have, and you have acceleration and deceleration things. If you're a car and you're running through and there's another car that pulls in front of you, you can't just stop on a dime. That doesn't make any sense. So you have like deceleration rules.
There's a lot of rules.
There was a bullet point here that I really hope I didn't zone out for, and you've already spoken about. But it says in high school, college, these games were easier to get to the table.
Yeah.
What about that?
So I love BattleTech. Like, okay. The concept behind it, the playing it, like, everything about BattleTech.
I have no idea what BattleTech is or why it's cool.
All right. So BattleTech is the universe itself and the story behind it, I never really got into. Didn't really care about that at all. But the parts that I really loved was you got to design these giant mechanized robots.
Oh, cool.
Giant mecha robot things.
Okay.
And if you've never watched the movie Robot Jocks, just stop what you're doing right now. Hit pause. We'll be here when you get back. Watch Robot Jocks.
Well, you could be like 2016, 17 and watch Pacific Rim.
You could. But watch Robot Jocks because...
Okay, watch that too.
So good. It's actually terrible. But it does follow the whole BattleTech kind of idea.
Right.
In Robot Jocks, it's... All wars have been decided now by giant mechs. So anytime two countries go to war with each other, they just send their like mechs at each other, and it's just one pilot versus one pilot in their giant mechs, and they fight each other. Whoever wins, that's the winner of the conflict. Seems like a really I like that idea. So, but you design your robots. You have a certain amount of tonnage. So if you have like 40 tons, you have a small mech, and he can move around very quickly and. You just basically go in, shoot, run out. But you have 100-ton mechs, which are really slow, like tank-like things. They have a ton of armor and things like that. But you build a team out of a certain amount of tonnage. So you might have 250 tons to build a team out of. And you also have amount of money. So you have tons and money that you're trying to like optimize and build these mechs out of. And then you have these two different teams of mechs that are fighting each other. And it is so much fun. It's all on a hex based and it's all D6 based. So it's all just regular six-sided dice. And your movement is based on hexes. You have elevation. You have jump jets to like jump you up. All your mechs, everything you do generates heat. So if you generate too much heat because you're firing too many lasers, which are really awesome, but you can shut down your mech because like, oh, they're overheating because you don't have enough heat sinks to get rid of all the heat. And all of this stuff is just like, oh, it's so much fun. And when I was in high school, I had a friend and we used to play this all the time. The two of us, like, we did everything else. We were in high school. What else were we going to do, right? Mm-hmm. So we would just like pretty much 3 or 4 nights a week, we'd be playing BattleTech.
Nice.
You know, and the times we were playing BattleTech, we were playing Champions, which was it was a role-playing game for superheroes. But it's so much easier to get into these kind of games when it's the only thing you have to do.
I see.
Because they're lifestyle games, right? This is all you do for your gaming time.
You also need to have somebody who's kind of equally matched to you. If you are creating your army and getting your butt kicked every time, you're not going to want to keep playing.
Right.
And it's hard to find, new people. Because I feel like if you're getting your butt kicked all the time, it's not as bad if you're getting your butt kicked by different people. But if you get your butt kicked by the same person over and over and over again, it's not fun to play anymore.
Yeah, right.
You don't want to play that person.
Yeah. It's also not fun to go to the game store, and play this. Like, oh, it's BattleTech night at the local game store. I'm going to go there. And they're just, super rules lawyer-y people. That's not a fun game. Like, I just want to have fun, and you are saying, oh, well, you moved this, and you didn't say you were going to do that, so that never happened. It's like, but why wouldn't have I done that? It's like, nope, sorry, you didn't say it. So you really have to play with someone who likes the game and is playing the game to play the game. And if you want to say, hey, we're doing ultra competitive right now because we're tournament training, fine. But otherwise, just have fun with these games. They are a ton of fun. They're simulation games that are a ton of fun. So, do you guys have any questions about these games? Like, Kitty, I think you want to play these games.
Kind of. I was also looking at some of the more historical ones. And, I'm a big history nerd, so I might do some investigating. But, I have an infant son, so it might not be the right time for me.
Well, anytime you want to play Shadespire, because it is a very easy game to just spin up. It takes less than an hour to play a session. I am totally in.
All right.
Josh, what do you think? Have we converted you, or is like, no, you haven't, when you want nothing to do
you
with
it? You haven't converted me. I would probably give Shadespire a go, but I don't think I've been converted, but I can see why other people like it. Definitely.
So I have on the table right now a before and after of Shadespire. So the before is...
Hey.
There goes my wine glass.
Hey, this is why we do it live, guys.
All live, all the time.
You've got to get the good moments in.
So, what I was saying is we have a flat thing, and then we have the assembled miniatures, and I'm going to go assemble a wine glass in a second.
That feels so sad. You got so close to catching it as well.
I did.
I had like, so much hope in you.
Oh. It was like slow motion, and there was nothing I could do with that.
Good try.
So, anyway, well, that's probably our cue to end the show.
Why the hell not?
So, if you want to follow us, you can follow us at on Facebook, Tabletop Game Talk Podcast, on Twitter at Tabletop Game TLK. You can follow me at Game Master Chris. I'm actually posting a number of paintings, or I'm doing painting my entire Arcadia Quest set. So, if you want to follow me there, you can see all those pictures. You can also support us at TabletopGameTalk.com/Patreon. All our patrons are automatically entered into our contests. And for the rest of this stuff, we're going to let Josh talk.
Indeed. Well, Tabletop Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening, and remember, we love your feedback. So email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Jiljam, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Michael Ohl, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Stefan, I'll use small words that you're sure to understand, Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, John Lewis, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Carl Hammond, David Radke, Lars Morgan, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum, Phil Swartzwell, Jordan Livingston, Greg Kamai, Zoe Ng, Chad Covey, Anne Reynolds, Eric Huffman, Andre Ribera, Adriana Dong, Christopher Vincent, Nate, and Faz Flintham. Until next week, when we talk about games as collectibles, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. That's a lot of glass.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I wish I had one of those things from the Fifth Element that can come and clean everything up.
Oh, the little robot things?
Yeah. That'd be great.
All right. Well, the stem's still intact.